here we go on a Friday. Oh, my gosh. God. Tom's got a big movie review.
Hey, a movie review? Can we start off the show that way?
Let me tell you, the Aeronauts set in 1862.
No. Yeah, hold back.
Hold on.
That was just a tease.
You're teasing on everybody.
I was told by management to get into the show faster.
Is that right? Yeah. There are butterflies, baby, up on my
thighs. My temperature's not right. That's what they do on 710 ESPN.
You get into stuff?
They get into stuff faster.
Less of you and Tom yucking it up. Hey, Hannah.
Hey.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Feel the speed, the pace, feel it?
I always feel it.
All right.
I follow
you. How about them Cowboys?
Yeah. Go for it. Let me have it.
The other man,
I'll let him have it. They
management
were terrible.
Also said, have Tom not bring up Cowboys with Hannah. Okay.
I bet.
So, what was it, about 4 months ago? The idea was Seattle said, hey, you know what? King County throws money in. We throw money into this homeless problem. So let's come together and form a group.
Regional.
Okay.
Which the city of Seattle has been saying forever.
Yes.
We need a regional. We can't pay for it by ourselves to deal with the homelessness issue.
Okay. And since it affects so many areas outside of Seattle, let's all get in this together. We'll form this regional sort of authority.
Right.
And then at that point, we'll then divvy stuff up. We'll have the money and we'll be able to fight it on all fronts.
And that was so, and I've been following this forever, but it was last year sometime that they, Dow Constantine and Jenny Durkin called a press conference. They came out and they called it a new entity that they were going to get together and try to come up with. And then several months later, over the summer, they actually announced this plan for this regional authority. And the idea at the time was, because they couldn't get all the suburban cities quite to buy in at that point, which, you know, the other cities in King County. So it was going to start off with just Seattle and King County. I think a budget of $132 million, Seattle putting in the bulk at about $73 million. And create this new structure where the majority of the homeless response services, the emergency homeless response services for the two county and the city were going to be under one new agency, except for like the navigation team was going to stay with Seattle and everything. Other than that, it was going to be a coordinated effort.
Okay. Seems like a good idea.
Yes. And it was coming up for a vote this weekend with the regional policy committee. So that's King County, Seattle reps, and then people from other cities and they come together and vote on regional issues. So it was coming up, but then over the Thanksgiving holiday, Jeanie Cole Wells realized that this was just not going to, it wasn't going to pass. There were concerns about it right away. It basically created this board that would have had most of the policymaking power that had no elected officials on it. It was what was called experts, people with some lived homelessness experience and then other homelessness experts.
Ugh.
And then there would have an oversight board.
Plan,
yeah. And there was an oversight committee then that would have basically up or down budget vote power. That was about it. And that would have elected officials. So all over, you know, I mean, it's regional leaders that have to all get in on the same page on this. And they weren't there. They had issues with that and some other things. So Jeanie Cole Wells over the Thanksgiving break got together and with some people who were in town and figured out a change plan that essentially reverses that. So now it will be elected leaders that have most of the policymaking power, but there's still going to be some seats at the table for those who have that lived experience. Mm-hmm. And that was a really, really big deal. However, I think the numbers make it so that they could always be overridden by the elected officials.
By the accountable people. Yeah. The people that are placed in there through elections.
Yeah, but the accountable stuff is why they said that the lawmakers who wanted this change say that's why, because the concerns we were getting first was having all of these civilians in charge of making policy. There was nobody to be held accountable.
Okay.
One of the problems is that that's sort of what we already had.
Right.
Is, you know, politicians and everyone's playing politics. And so let's just try to streamline this by getting the experts involved. But then they realize, oh, no. That means we, the elected officials, are giving up some control. We don't want to do that. So then it was flipped. And so now the question is, oh, they flipped. Will it even get passed by the various King County and city council boards?
We'll see. So the other thing that is in this changed version is that the suburban cities, which, to be clear, are not putting any initial money into this, but they are going to get seats at the table and they're going to get a vote. They weren't going to get that or much of one before. And now I believe they have 3 or 4 seats. So that was a big deal because they're concerned about a lot of things. They don't want any of their money that they currently get from King County to be used. You know, they don't want to lose their share of money that they get for other things because homelessness where they live is not the same as it is here in Seattle. But they want to have a voice and hopefully eventually become one big group where they are all in on it together.
Why don't they set it up like the population when it comes to Electoral College? So, like, Sammamish has got three homeless people. So that would count for your three. So you're sitting there at the board with your three. And if you're in Bothell or if you're in Medina or some other place, each one represented by the number of homeless people. And then if something like Seattle, you could see Seattle would be like California.
Yeah.
With 34 Electoral College votes, you got just a whole bunch of homeless people. We encourage them to come and live their life here. And they would have a bigger voting block because they have more homeless people.
But if they have no money at stake, that feels like it's like taxation without representation.
Who has because no they money get, at stake? They still get King County dollars, right? So they, you know what I mean? In general, some of the tax money from King County that goes to homelessness is stuff that they get just in general.
Yeah.
So it gets complicated, but some of it's kind of theirs.
Okay.
Well, the other interesting sort of twist on it is who has the authority to tax, right? So if it turns into that,
here's the deal. So here's the other big change. This was going to be what is a public development authority. And basically that means they can't levy taxes unless the state legislature gives them the okay to. That's the original version of what they had. So the state legislature could have given them the power to tax to come up with money for homelessness. Instead, now it is an interlocal agreement, which can never tax. And Lisa Horbold on the Seattle City Council had an issue.
I've always been under the impression, going way back to one table, that we were eventually going to have a conversation around our funding needs, as described by the McKinsey report, and that this was a first step to get us on that path. And I don't know why we would, in this structure, foreclose our opportunities to do that at this stage.
And there really wasn't an answer, but that's what's on the table right now. So
so she sounds like she's a no vote.
But yeah, this is so not a done deal. There is a kind of sense of urgency to get this done before the end of the year because you've got some council members, both on the King County Council and on the City Council, who did a lot of work to get this together, and they're going to be gone. They're on their way out. So there's kind of a sense of urgency to get this done before.
Larry Gossett has said that he wants the people that are on this new board, right? Do you have him saying that?
Yeah, I don't have the cut, but I do have him saying he wants he put an amendment forward and it passed that requires the Homelessness Authority's Implementation Board, the experts basically, to reflect the racial and ethnic makeup of King County. So that went through. The other interesting thing is the King County seats, one of the people has to be living in a part of King County that does not include Seattle, and one has to be from a part of King County that is Seattle.
Okay, so this is never going to go anywhere. Anything else, Hannah?
No.
In other words, homelessness is a regional problem, but it can't be addressed regionally.
I don't think it can be rushed. Sure. I think it's going to take a minute, I think.
A minute. Oh, thank you, Hannah.
A long minute.
Cowboys play who on Sunday? Huh?
No,
they're done. They died last night.
They played Thursday.
Go Seahawks.
Against Chicago. Yeah, go Seahawks. Hey, I knew we'd win her over.
You must have lost to the Chicago Bears.
Yeah. Yeah. 31-24.
All right. By the way, we go behind enemy lines. We talk to our guy, Kelvin Washington, who's a lot of fun.
That's right. Yeah, he's a lot of fun. And the last time we talked to him, L.A. was quite full of itself because they, after all, they were they made it to the Super Bowl last year. Now they're kind of they've hit a tough patch.
I'd like to get his take. Can I bring up, in case we run out of stuff to talk about, can I ask him about the guy that made the comment about?
No.
Why not?
Because it's already, even the San Francisco 49er players have come to that guy's defense.
Okay.
I think it's the thing is, if you run out of things,
stop going. If he starts talking about defensive ends and offensive linemen and stunts and stuff, I'm going to pull that one out of the bag.
Okay.
All right. Wall to wall impeachment coverage. Apparently, there's a problem. Come on, journalists, get your act together. We haven't moved the needle enough. We need to move the needle. That's your job. It's not to inform, but it's to persuade.
Talk, John. That's not what the point of the story is about.
Yeah, it says it in there that the journalists really need to do what they can. Right now, they're just sort of yelling at the train as it's going by. There's a small group of people that could possibly be moved in one direction
one
or the
direction
other.
One direction or the other. That's
or
right.
The
you
other.
Make it sound like it's one direction.
Yeah. Like the media doesn't have a dog in this fight.
It doesn't.
Right. Okay. In your fantasy world, Tom, where journalists are unbiased, this article
it's
says.
It's called journalism, John.
It's right. It's called journalism. And the idea is to persuade. So they want to persuade the individuals to look at this case. They think they can be persuaded. But the problem is they're not even paying attention.
That's
what do
right.
they say? 12% that could possibly be persuaded, not informed, but persuaded, right?
Well, no, you reach the undecided. Mm-hmm. Persuaded means to come down one side or the other. So right now, we've mostly these impeachment hearings have hardened both sides. People pro-Trump and anti-Trump, for want of a better phrase. They said, so what's journalism's job? Is journalism's job just to, you know, repeat to the, you know, the confirmation bias on both sides? No, the one thing that journalists could do is actually reach out to the undecideds. Mm-hmm. They're mostly what they call them, Republicans who are less certain Republicans is how they're called. Yeah. But the thing is, they say that the people that are most persuadable are undecided, are not hardened into a position.
Mm-hmm.
They're not hardened into a position because they don't care.
Yeah.
They're not paying attention.
Uh-huh.
So the proposal here is in this opinion piece is maybe we should direct our attention to those people to get them informed one way or the other so they can decide. And so their pitch is, well, how do you do it? The suggestion is studios do this all the time with movies. You come up with a trailer. What's the point of a trailer? The point of a trailer is to get you interested enough in the story that you want to come back in a month to go see the movie. And so they have to come up with the key essentials, give the basic setup for the plot without resolving the plot. In other words, figure out a way. They say they spend $1 million, at least $1 million. Sometimes film companies spend as much money pitching, marketing the movie as they do on the movie, that maybe journalists ought to start looking at coming up with punchy 3-minute versions to recap to get them interested. That's the thrust of this. It's not to present in one way or the other, but to actually get them invested in the outcome.
So is the job of the journalist to convince the public that the president should be impeached and removed?
No.
But what they're saying is that wall-to-wall impeachment coverage is not changing anyone's mind.
That's right.
Right. So you try to change the mind of the person.
No, John, you get...
It's not changing. Here's how journalists can reach the undecided.
That's right. The undecided are people that don't care.
Mm-hmm.
All they want them to do is
get the choice. They've made the choice. They don't care. They know it's there. They can watch it, but they don't care.
Okay, yeah. No, I think you are taking your confirmation bias, John.
Yes. Oh, everybody has it except for journalists. Everybody has it except journalists.
The people, that's their job, yes.
Oh,
everybody may eat
really,
sloppily.
Really, honestly.
Yes.
Honestly, you're a smart guy.
I am a smart guy.
You really believe there is no bias in journalists. Journalists have no bias.
Journalists have no bias.
They have no bias.
But when they do their profession right, they do it. It's like a dentist. A dentist may hate Trump or love Trump, but if they're working on Trump's teeth, they're doing a good job with dentistry. They're not looking at judging.
Let me tell you something. If Ronald Reagan said while he was laying on the operating room table and he looked up at the guy just before they put him under, he said, are you Republican or Democrat?
That's right.
Because you want to make... If you were a Democrat
joke.
You were working on Donald Trump's teeth, you're telling me
wouldn't
wick a nerve every once in a while? You're damn right you
not.
Would.
Absolutely. Because I'm a professional dentist.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying people's hatred.
I want that as a drop. I'm a professional dentist.
Hatred for Trump is so deep.
No.
So deep and so demented.
Your defense of Trump is so deep.
No, I'm not defending Trump. I'm just defending the truth, which is journalists are biased. That's all.
Not in their professional activity. At least if they're doing it right.
Oh,
so the idea
if they're doing it right. Okay,
exactly,
go ahead.
Just like a good dentist. What they're saying is that what's the point of journalism if both sides are just hearing what they want to hear when it comes to this? Well, journalists can try to contact the people that have tuned out to get them interested, not to get them engaged, not to tip them one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You may find that the people that are uninterested right now, if they get engaged, may find that, well, this is why I'm not that interested, because I don't think whatever Trump did doesn't affect, you know, the price of gas, and so I don't really care. The idea is if they're interested in what's happening, they can. They say the people that are interested in this are as much pro-Trump as anti-Trump.
Yeah. Well, the idea of setting up having a 1-minute trailer or a 2-minute trailer like they do in the movies in order to bring the news forward, that's what they do when it comes to the news, what they deliver in nightly news.
Well, in fact, that's what they say.
They boil it down to 1 minute and 30 seconds.
Although it still has a large viewership, 20 million people, that's a drop in the bucket. And the people that aren't paying attention are not watching the nightly news as well.
Or they, you know what it is? They don't care. It doesn't mean anything to them. You're at the airport waiting for a flight.
Right.
Your flight's going to Las Vegas, and you're sitting there, and they're calling a flight that's going to Casper, Wyoming. Okay, fine. Yeah. You hear it. Doesn't mean anything to you because you're not going to Casper, Wyoming, so you don't care. You look at this thing, you think, oh, I don't really care. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't affect me one way or the other. I got other things going on in my life, and this is what the people do. People on the hard right, people on the hard left, and the media promoting the folks on the left. The fact that when you go to The Price is Right, I try to find the clips because I knew Jacob is anti-Price is Right clips. I put in Price is Right worst guess. Yeah. It is so embarrassing for those people. And even Drew Carey's like, really? $7,000? Really? Really? And the person's like, yeah, $7,000. And it was like $250. And some guy bet $250,000. And poor Bob Barker's like, is your guess really $250,000? Then the guy dropped it down to $60,000. He still got booed. But now when you stand there in the front line and you have to try to identify, you know, it's Kraft macaroni and cheese. It's fast. Yeah. It's nutritious. Your family will love Kraft macaroni and cheese. They give a little commercial for it, and then that's you buzz in as to what the value is.
Yes. So apparently in the 70s, John, your heyday, isn't that when you were on the your talk shows? Or maybe it's a little early.
What do you mean, when I was watching them?
No. When you were on them. Were you in the 90s?
70s, Tom. I was born in 62. I mean, what was I doing? Like a kids talk show?
70s. Coming up next.
70s are
somebody dropped a tranny.
70s, and that's a 10-year period.
What, I gonna be on a talk show in the 70s?
Well, in the 70s. The reason I bring up the 70s is because that was when the contestants, that was the heyday of smart contestants.
They got it right.
That's right. Yes. They were only off 8% of the prices. Now, in the swinging 20 teens.
Yeah.
We're now 20% off. And they said, what has happened? Mm-hmm. And they do admit in this article, they do admit. Now, of course, it could be that the show has evolved and changed in some ways over the last 40 years. So maybe it's not quite as fair. But in general, people do not know the price of things as well as they did in the 1970s. And isn't that odd? And a Harvard professor did this study, and he figures out that there are a couple of – he's got suggestions for why this is happening. One is – first off, inflation was through the roof in the 1970s.
Yeah.
When inflation's through the roof, people are much more attentive to prices. They're much more concerned, oh, my God, how much is it going to cost? So they're aware of it. Because inflation has been, you know, basically not non-existent, but very it's a minor issue now. We don't apparently pay that close attention to prices, and so we don't know as much because we don't have to care as much. Second thing is, e-commerce, they claim, makes people less sensitive to price. That online competition has made so many prices all the same anyway that the way they really push products is some distinctive feature. Maybe it's a color, or maybe it's a number of particular items that are put together.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, there are more products than ever. And this is the most fascinating statistic for me. There are 50 times as many products as a grocery store than there were 80 years ago. 50 times.
I'm going to ask you this.
Okay.
You ready? It's a gallon of whole milk. Tom, what's your guess? A
gallon of whole milk. I'd say $3.29.
Jacob, whole milk. I only buy the smaller ones, so I would guess $2.50.
Yeah. Andrew, gallon of whole milk.
$3.
Tom comes close. It's $3.27.
Wow, look at me.
Look at you. Yeah. Wow.
I should go on that show. Hey, Drew Carey, I'm waving to you from the audience.
Tom Tagney, come on down.
2 cents. Although I was 2 cents over, so that validates. Well,
that's true. Andrew wins it. And hey. Andrew, don't know your last name. Come on down. We're going to Kelvin Washington on the phone in just a bit here. Tom, we're going to go behind enemy lines. But don't forget, Keel Mortgage is the place to call. 1-888-778-KIEL. Keel Mortgage for all your mortgage needs. With money being so cheap right now, take it out of the house, reinvest it back in the house, or maybe refinance and do what you want with that money, especially with the holidays right around the corner. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. I am concerned about Kelvin Washington because when we first discovered him, Tom, he was top of the top in L.A. when it came to sports talk.
That's why
you go to him. And then as you follow him along, he sort of seems like he's not in the sports world anymore.
Well, he's bigger than sports. See, that's
is why. That what, you can't contain
he's,
him that's with why one genre?
He's so big, he bursts out the seams when you try
I'm just concerned the next time we get him on, he's on a cable access show. That's my biggest concern. We're going to go behind enemy lines. Hopefully he didn't hear any of that. Kelvin Washington, how are you?
The slight, it just keeps getting worse and worse. Last time I talked to you guys, you slighted me a bit, but it was just enough. A little ribbing going on. I was okay with that. Now it's going to the point where I may have to take a flight to Seattle and see what's really going on here, guys.
Now, you work on a show called Afternoon Beat.
How? No, actually, we have changed the name. It is Your Afternoons on Spectrum News One. I cover sports for the L.A. Times Today Show. Get that right. Let's add that to the record.
All right.
And I still work with Fox Sports Radio.
Okay. Well, Jacob's got you doing Afternoon Beat.
I'm sorry, Kevin. I just checked your Twitter
Jacob's
bio.
You're about to get beat.
Yeah. Dance, dance, okay. Nation. Okay, so here we are again, and this game is exciting for a number of reasons. Your running back has been reincarnated.
Yeah, unfortunately for us.
I know, but just giving us some good stuff.
Okay, Tom. Gotcha.
I took a shot at him with the cable access point. Okay, so Gurley is back, and that's not going to be so good for us. And our defensive rush, our pressure on quarterback has increased. So we've got a couple of things that have changed the dynamics between how the Rams played the Seahawks, how the Seahawks played the Rams in week five. How do you feel? How confident are you with our Seahawks coming to town?
Not confident right now. I do think the Rams, they'll be better than what maybe people expect. I think there's an element, of course, of, you know, familiarity with the teams over the last, you know, couple of years, 2-3 years. Yeah. And I think there's an element of the Rams realizing, look, in order for us to have any, 5% chance of making the playoffs, you know, we got to do something. And even if it's not about the playoffs, it's about realizing within themselves, no, we really are a good to great team. Maybe this is just a tad bit of an off season. Let's get it, you know, going back next season. I think they need to win a game like this. I think this is a statement game. I know it's cliche. We say it all the time, but it really is, because I think it goes again to the psyche of themselves saying, look, we really are a talented group. We really are a good team. You know, we've lost some close games a la the game these two played last time.
Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see what comes out there. And more importantly, what Jared Goff comes out. Now, you guys just mentioned the pass rush that you have is increasing. And that's the last thing Jared Goff needs, right? He's had a pretty mediocre at best season. And it's going to be really telling, you know, this game for him to see if he can get it going. Because the Cardinals are the Cardinals. They're not great the last time they played. The last game that the Rams played. So this is really the game where we can see, okay, is Jared Goff the guy who we saw getting the team to the Super Bowl, or is it more of what we've seen this season, which has been, at best.
So, yeah, the last time we met, that was a classic game. You guys didn't miss a field goal. You'd have won the game. I mean, it came down to, you know, field goals at the end. It was unbelievably great. Since then, the Seahawks have gone up, and you guys have more or less gone cratered, at least by expectations. What do you make? How surprised are you at the success the Seahawks have had of late?
To be honest with you, I'm not surprised. The last, what have you been doing this? I think 2 or 3 years we've been doing this.
Yeah.
You know, me and you guys. And most of the time when we have our question that comes at the end, I say Russell Wilson. And that's because I know it's easy to just say quarterback, but there are a handful of guys. And you can say in any particular sport, but since we're talking about football, where you go, you know what? I've got a chance with that guy. I don't care who's out. All your starting receivers can be out. Your starting running back could be hurt. You could have a new head coach. But as long as we have Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, even though Tom Brady has not had a great year, but in a particular game, as long as we have Tom Brady, there's a certain caliber of guys where you feel like, I don't care what's going on. We have that. And those are the difference makers. You have Russell Wilson. So to me, it's no surprise. Now, Carson's been running the ball exceptionally well. Yeah, you guys have been able to get a lot of offense out of a lot of productivity out of some receivers that aren't big names. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, your defense is not the Legion of Boom, but it's the Legion of, hey, we're here. And, and so, you know, hey, we don't have a name yet, but we're here. But to be honest with you, it's not surprising because you have Russell Wilson. And as a guy who grew up in Detroit, you know, I look at a guy like Matthew Stafford and I say, yes, he's above average quarterback, but there's nothing about him at this point, after all, maybe 10 years now, where you can say we're going to win because of him.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between, you know, maybe 5 or 6 guys in the league.
So for those that don't know, your head coach, Sean McVay, is the youngest coach in the NFL. Yeah.
seems to be a very, very interesting individual. Have you ever gotten a chance to sit down and do a one-on-one with him?
Not sit down, but, you know, my time at ESPN, we were able to have him on the phone a few times. He does seem to be a very interesting guy. I actually saw an HBO Real Sports on him. I mean, he seems interesting, but you know what? I bet you if we were around him, we would probably say he's not that interesting. Like, I don't think he's going to wow you with his taste in art. I don't think he's going to, you know, tell you about something that was amazing in the LA Times, other than maybe a sports. I mean, he is very much into football. He's one of those guys that's hyper-analytical about it. He's very much a photogenic mind about football. So I don't know if his girlfriend is going to tell you some amazing things that they've done.
Hey, have you figured out, have you cracked the mystery of Todd Gurley? Nobody outside LA can understand why he was so great, then was so not great, and now he seems to be back up. What's going on with him, do you finally know?
I think it's an element of, excuse me, guys, a few things. I think, one, it is health. I mean, I do think he's not 100%, and I don't think he ever will be again. Also, I think there's a commitment, right? I think teams came into this season, and maybe even towards the end of last season, saying, okay, look, we know it looks on paper like they're this ultra-creative team, right? They put up a bunch of points.
Yep.
You got guys scoring all over. It could be the receivers. It could be the backs. It could be tight ends. But I think teams really realized and said, you know what? Everything they're doing is solely based off Todd Gurley. It's him running the ball early, and then it turns into a play action off of him. And then it comes in, you know, they'll get some double action where they may do a reverse play because of him. So I think teams went into it saying, I don't give a dang what else you do.
Yeah.
If we shut Todd Gurley down, we've got a great chance.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Hey, you never disappoint, my friend. And here comes your question. Your own frying pan. You hit one of them over the head when they come off the bus. You get on that horse. We give them the horse, and you don't have to give it back to us. Off you go, Mr. Washington, on the back of the horse. And, of course, you've got your Seahawk slightly unconscious, and you then tear his jersey asunder. You put him in a L.A. Rams jersey. Who do you kidnap?
Well... Oh, there we go. The fact of the matter is, I just mentioned the guy. It's going to be Russell Wilson because I think he's on. And you can't leave out the fact that he is an MVP candidate.
Yes.
In the back of his mind, I know he's G-golly all about the team. Go Hawks. But I think there's an element of him.
Okay, hey, wait. Stop. Would you be more, who would you rather drive across country with? Sean McVay or Russell Wilson?
Ooh.
Hold on. Let me get some music underneath
That's
this.
That's a great question. And by the way, I still want to hit you with the frying pan. But I'm going to go with, that's tough. I'm going to go Russell Wilson simply because at some point on our 6, 7, 8-hour, 10-hour road trip, he's going to FaceTime Sierra. That'd be awesome. Right?
Fair enough.
All right. And final score.
Oh, I said, now that's a great question. I think it is going to be high scoring. I don't think this is going to be a defensive game as it may have been, you know, maybe 3, 4 years ago. So I'm going to take it 34-31. You guys.
Oh, wow. Kellen Washington, I'm going to Venmo you $20 because this was a great segment. All right?
You know what? Lunch on you. I'll take it.
No. Yeah, look, $20 coming your way. I just got to find you
that
on
won't
Venmo.
Won't be much in L.A.
Hey,
that
by the way,
yeah, that's
Jake,
right.
we'll Jake is going to ask you your Venmo when we put you, so put you on hold. We'll be right back. Thanks.
Thanks, man.
It was fun having Kelvin Washington on from Afternoon Beat and a contributor for the LA Times today. That's our Behind Enemy Lines segment.
He's certainly not cocky about the LA Rams, is he?
No.
Predicting a loss.
He gets us winning it.
Right? Yeah.
High scoring game in the end, we win.
Good.
Okay. Let's see. America's craziest garage sale is on the radio. And you think, well, how do you do a garage sale on the radio? Well, we'll play a little bit for you here. And the show's called Trading Times. It's been around for about 20-some years. It's in a small little town in California. And the people that listen to this radio show say it kind of keeps the community together.
Yep.
And people tune into it. And if you have something you want to sell, you could call the radio station, and you just describe what you have. Well, here, I'll give you a cut of it.
And this is the Trading Times show. I'm Woo-hoo. Renee, your host, and I am joined.
No, don't ever do that.
Woo-hoo. I got to remember that. One.
Yeah, woohoo.
So I'm Renee, your host, and I am joined in the studio, as always, by Doug.
Hi, Renee. Hi, Doug. Hello, everybody out there. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Talked about politics and religion.
and escaped alive.
And escaped alive.
Okay, let me just get a quick little land. This guy's been doing this for 20 years. When a person doesn't know what to say, they repeat your last two words that you've said. Did you hear it?
I didn't notice it, but...
And escaped alive.
Escaped alive.
First, we're going to have to make Trading Time
rules.
That's right.
Rules, regulations, stipulations, requirements, admonitions, conventions, procedures, protocol, cautions, warnings, guidelines, and ordinances. Number one, no professionals. If you do this for a living or if it is one of your major sources.
Okay, I mean, you can't take any more of that. Okay, here's an example of one of their calls.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, magic indeed.
Yep.
this is Gail from Boonville, and we have a cord of...
Oh, she's good. I got all her albums.
Boonville, already.
Oak, that's ready. We will deliver it for $300. We don't, because it's a small amount and we have a large truck, we don't want to go too far away, so we're hoping Boonville, Philo area.
Okay, what did she have? I even missed what she was selling.
A cord of oak.
Oh, cord of oak.
Cord of wood.
Is it dry or is it green, did she say?
She specifies later that it
is
dry.
Will she deliver outside Boonville?
It's seasoned. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to.
And how long does it go on for? How long do people sell stuff for?
How long does their little pitch last?
Yeah.
The show's an hour a week. 1 hour a week. So this is not like, 3 hours a day like we do.
But people seem to like it.
Yes. People, because it's like talking over your neighbor, over the back fence saying, hey, I hear Charlie up the road.
Yeah.
this and that rutabagas.
Yeah. So they're putting everybody together. This is similar. There was a show in New Jersey, in South Jersey, near Ocean City. It was a guy on camera, and he had a desk and a phone, and the phone number was written on a piece of paper in front. And you could call up, and you would then sell the same sort of thing. But this was on television. So it's just the other person on the other end of the phone. And I looked for it. I couldn't find it. My brother and I used to watch it. This is how horrible it was. It was like this. So if you have something you want to sell, just, give us a call right now. And, so you got somebody on the line right now. Hello? Yeah. Well, how old is it?
You can't hear.
Is it still? The belt's broken. All right. What do you want for it? I'm just like, you couldn't hear the... No one ever... Hey, let's get
hilarious.
The other side. Okay, all right, well, thanks. I'll see what I can do. We got a washer or dryer. Got a broken belt. Anybody else? Oh, another call coming in.